Joining us now is the 2016 Evo Melee champion, winner of Genesis 6 Melee singles, a member of Team Liquid, and considered one of the gods of Smash Bros. Hungrybox, welcome into Checkpoint XP.
I'm happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So we obviously have to start with the big announcement that there's going to be no Melee at Evo 2019. How did you react to that announcement?
Probably the same way I'm reacting now every time I hear those words. Like, it's like a piercing through my heart, pretty much. But it's interesting, right? Because I would say Evo did take a gamble in sort of allowing whatever community raised the most money for breast cancer back in 2013 to be that, you know, coveted eighth spot in the tournament. And once we were able to get it, you took a game that was at that point 12 years old and turned it in and put it on the main stage. And next thing you know, that alongside a documentary being released turned it into an esport. And now Melee is still, you know, vibrantly alive and well at this point 18 years later. So they had us at Evo in the early, and I think 07, and then they took us out, and then they had us back in 2013 all the way through 2018. And then I think about a month ago, they announced the lineup for the new Evo, and we were all waiting with like bated breath to see if we were actually going to be back there. But, you know, instead of saying we're going to have, you know, Melee here for one last time to give them one last go out with a bang, they just kind of said, here's, you know, an epilogue video. Thanks for the memories. Thanks for paying our venue fee. they kind of just left this like on red. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's just an odd way to do it, given the fact that every year we brought them at least, I think it's averaged 1,500 entrants to their tournaments, especially since like 2014, I believe. And so we are very niche because we're one of the biggest fighting game communities for a game that's, you know, almost two decades old, but we still have these numbers. So we were just confused. I'm not sure if it was a logistical issue, but I guess they just didn't want to give us that spotlight anymore. So it's kind of confusing to all of us, but, you know, I guess at some point it has to happen.
Would you say that the scene's reaction has been much the same as yours, like kind of shocked confusion?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, it's just like a lot of top players are like, you know, I'm not surprised they did this, but still it's so weird considering it. Like, if we were just some game that, you know, happened to be on there as like a traditional thing, but our numbers were low, then of course, like, obviously the organizers of Evo, guys like Mr. Wizards, like, they're businessmen. They know what they're doing in terms of making a higher profit margins for their event. But, you know, I thought, you know, we never even had any pot bonuses for our tournaments, right? Like, you would have, I think it was games like, it might have been either Guilty Gear or one of the Anime Fighters, but I remember one year they had like a $50,000 prize bonus. It might have been even Street Fighter. I'm sorry if I'm getting it wrong. And, you know, you still had a bunch of people coming, but, you know, we would just only have the pot that was given by the players. I think it was like $10 per player going in. And we would compete, you know, not for these massive prize bonuses, but because we really loved the game. Mm-hmm. That's why everyone came out there, because Evo offers that platform as like the Super Bowl of fighting game events. So fortunately, the silver lining is that through the catapult that Evo gave us, you know, Melee still exists and has a slew of national events that exist both inside and outside the United States. And those are still having some really, really good viewership. I mean, Genesis 6 in February, 150,000 viewers for the Melee Top 8. And that's for a game no longer at Evo. It's just it's kind of interesting to think about.
Now, speaking of that, though, the Melee has been the standard for which Smash games are measured by in the Smash games that have come after it. Smash U is on the scene now. How does it compare in terms of, you know, the difference between it and Melee?
So Ultimate versus Melee, like, Ultimate is the direct successor to Smash for the Wii U. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with Smash for the Wii U, Ultimate will feel right, you know, perfectly, almost identical in your hands. Obviously, there's changes to, you know, character balances, a bit of an engine change in terms of the physics, you know, what you can do with grabs, the ledge, that sort of thing. But generally, especially for the casual competitor, Smash 4 and Smash for the Switch are just like brother and sister. So that being said, ever since, like, way back in 07 when Brawl came out, like, even Brawl was, like, such a drastic change from Melee that a lot of the Melee diehards, they're almost alienated. It actually caused a really big early rift in the community when that game came out, because there was confusion. It's kind of like, well, you took out all of these things in Melee, you know, things that are considered game-breaking, you know, people call them glitches at first, but, you know, later they were found to be honestly just part of the game. But things like wave dashing, L-canceling, just really, really incredibly frame-perfect fast options, which made the game that challenging, but they made it that much more exciting to watch. The removal of these aspects turned Brawl and Melee into basically separate esports. And then Brawl, Smash 4, and then Smash Ultimate, those have kind of been three true successors to one another, whereas Melee, to this day, apart from, you know, the PM, which was the user-made modifications of the game for Brawl. Apart from that, which wasn't even a Nintendo release, Melee has never really had a true successor. And I think that's the reason we just can't stop playing it. So Ultimate and Melee, very, very different. And they took all the feedback after Smash 4 came out to make the Melee players like it too. And don't get me wrong, Ultimate is, you know, definitely the best game I've ever played in the series since Melee. It's definitely the best release so far since Melee. But I'm just wondering, if they just turn a few more mechanics on, if they just switch a few more parameters, you could have a game really similar to Melee. And no matter what they release, Nintendo is still Nintendo. They have the hearts and the affection of so many millions of fans around the world that basically, I speak for us, we'll buy anything they put out when it comes to Smash content. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest here. We're gonna buy it anyway. It's like, oh, well, Mewtwo's in this, Roy's in this, Isabelle, fuck yeah, I'm buying it. You know, just like, it's such a sick game. So if that's the case, why not add that challenging factor, that speed of Melee again?
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're sitting down with Hungrybox of Team Liquid, and we're talking about the evolution of Smash Brothers and where Smash Brothers Ultimate has wound up.
So Smash Melee, Nintendo has always treated that with a very kind of hands-off approach. They kind of let that scene just kind of be. With Ultimate, it seems like they're taking a much more hands-on approach. How important do you think that is, or is it important? Shouldn't maybe Nintendo stay out, or do you want their involvement?
So Nintendo, I think even this weekend, or for the past couple of weeks, has been doing the, for the first time one of their own regional circuits, or national circuits, rather, for Smash Ultimate. It's been, you know, live broadcasted. They had, you know, good commentators for the event. Pretty decent production. But here's a funny thing. Like, this weekend was, I think, like the semifinals for that event, live from, I believe it was Vegas. You check on Twitch viewership, and at the same time, there was a tournament, a grassroots tournament called Collision happening, streamed on Nairo's channel. Tell me how Nairo had double the viewership of Nintendo for his event. And that's when it was in the early part of the bracket, had like 5,000 viewers, and the Nintendo event only had like 2,500. It might have changed as the day went on, but the reason that happened is because I think the one big thing that Nintendo is missing, the one thing that they just, for some reason, have never quite grasped, is that tons of their viewership when it comes to Twitch, an esports streaming platform, tons of their viewership is lended to the credibility of an event based on its rule sets. You know, would you want to watch LeBron James in basketball play in a really competitive high-stakes tournament, like in the playoffs, but then all the basketball players have to wear oven mitts and the floor is covered in oil? Like, it'll be funny to watch for like an hour and like, ha-ha, look, everyone's falling over. But then when you look at it and they're like, no, we're going to do this for the rest of the season. This is how they're going to play. you start to say, like, what the hell? What? That's not basketball, right? Like, I'm not, what is this crap? Now, the thing is, that's exactly the same way with Smash. We have a tradition of not using items. We have a tradition of using neutral stages. Because we take out all of these factors, which add this sort of random RNG element, which doesn't really dictate who the better player is in any sport, whether it's an e-sport, physical, virtual, whatever you want to call it. The winners are celebrated. People with the higher skills naturally or inclined at the game are always celebrated as champions. And sort of because it is that meritocracy, that's what generates hype. That's what generates narratives and storylines. When Nintendo, you know, showcases, hey, look at all the quirky things we can put in our game. For the casuals, you know, sure, it might be a ton of fun. Sure, for the dorm kids who drink and play Smash, or for the kids who are just playing on their Switch with their friends, that's the beautiful appeal of Smash, is how wide it goes. But when it comes to hosting a sanctioned tournament with money and prizes and fame on the line, the question is, why not just work with the community? We've perfected this, basically. We've perfected this industry, this machine of running and hosting events and making sure that the top players and casuals alike are all on the same level, allowed to compete in these open tournaments. And it really is, may the best man win. We have professional commentators, professional tournament organizers, professional streamers, professional video makers and editors, videographers, professional gamers. Everything you would need for good production is already there in the community. So the question for Nintendo is, why not just come to us? Why try to put your own rule set and get this paltry viewership? Because people, I mean, let's face it, they love the game, they love Nintendo, but they're never going to take a tournament like that seriously. It's just sad, because all we've been wishing for this whole time is Nintendo, you know, put in $100,000, which is pennies to a company that big, $100,000 on the line for this big, you know, 2 month wide circuit with a qualifying tournament in each corner of the country with one big grand finals in, you know, Las Vegas or wherever you want to hold it. Can you imagine what viewership that would get for the title of the Nintendo champion officially, you know, with them recognizing an official rule set?
Be huge.
That's what we want.
It would. It would be absolutely huge.
So I have to know, with all the different fighting game, you know, FGC games that are out there, what originally got you into Smash? And of all the characters, why Jigglypuff?
Well, then. So here's that question. Honestly, when I was growing up, I just loved playing every Nintendo game, especially on my Game Boy Advance, my GameCube. My thing back then was like being a completionist. I just wanted to like unlock every character in a game and every trophy, unlock every goal. I like beating games to 100% completion. It was just something really satisfying about that. And Melee was just another one of those games I was collecting dust in my closet. I remember I took it out and I was doing the thing where you get all the trophies, and one of them required you to beat this mode called All-Star mode. You have to beat it on very hard. And for some reason, something in the back of my mind said, wait a minute, I'm just going to choose a character I can restore HP with. If I can restore HP, I can just keep trying over and over and I'll never die. And that was Jigglypuff. I think for the Pokemon days, like, she had this move where she fell asleep and she got restored and it was great. So I tried doing that in the game and I realized it was a useless move. She just fell asleep and did nothing. And then the same exact day I'm walking over, my brother's playing the original Smash 64. I happen to look over and he lands this move with Jigglypuff called Rest. You fall asleep on your opponent and they fly off the screen and they explode in a fiery explosion. And I looked at it and I thought to myself and I said, wouldn't it be so funny if I hit my friend with that tonight? And so I go over to his house and I land it on him and we're all laughing at the ridiculousness of this move. And honestly, that one just funny evening set off a chain of reaction events that I had no idea was coming, because I realized I got really good at landing it. I got really good at moving around with Puff, and I got really good at just understanding spacing because I played so many of these damn platformer games for Nintendo growing up. It kind of just fell into my hands, and it felt natural. And so the next thing I know, I was a Jigglypuff player in the city of Orlando at 13 years old.
I absolutely love the answer to that question. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're talking to Hungry Box of Team Liquid about Melee, Smash U. We're going all over the place. Now, you know, Smash in the FGC is often where some of esports' best moments are made. You know, you were just talking about Jigglypuff and you know, that amazing moment that you can make. So why do you think, you know, prize pools and investments are so much smaller than in other esports with the FGC specifically?
It's a really good question, because games like League of Legends, Fortnite, like the really big PC games, they have such a widespread, massive appeal between casual and competitive. Like, almost everyone has a computer. Almost everyone can download these games. They're free to play. First of all, the barrier to entry is bar none, very, very low. But investors, they really like seeing comparisons, I feel, to traditional sports. And they really like seeing the idea of leagues and professional, you know, sanctioned tournaments and viewership. Now, I would say for the main big circuits, like, I think League of Legends still remains, like, the biggest esport that there is. But new games like Apex and Fortnite, like, you've seen the viewership they get on Twitch. There's a lot of money there just because of the sheer number of people that watch it. FGC has always been, in my opinion, it's like, you have sports that are professional that are still on, like, ESPN, but they're not, like, considered, like, the mecca of sports. Like, if League of Legends and Fortnite and Dota, whatever you want to call it, if those games are, like, the basketball and the football and the soccer, you know, the baseball, those huge ones, I would say that the FGC is more, it's like, they're known titles, but they don't have the same prestige. Maybe, like, a professional, maybe even tennis or professional bowling or, you know, the winter sports and Olympic games. Like, everyone knows about them, right? Mm-hmm. But the same amount of prestige isn't put onto them because it's almost like a gamble for them, I feel. But with the growing viewership and how popular they've gotten, especially a title as well-known as Super Smash Brothers, I really do think the returns would be massive if they're just properly utilized. And I really do think that as long as more top-tier esports organizations continue to pick up players and continue to make sure these events have narratives and they have reasons for people to watch them, to me, that's as viable as any other esport. You just need the viewership, and I think we have it.
So the FGC has been doing esports since before we even called them esports. And today you've got people who aspire to be pros and know when they've made it. I mean, heck, my brother is trying to make it as a Smash pro now. He's decided he likes the game enough, he wants to go for it. When would you say that you first recognized yourself as a professional esports athlete?
The moment I was able to start paying for my stuff at school. and college with winnings from Smash. As little as it was back then, when I, you know, from the first time I ever made my first $17 at a local tournament to, you know, winning whatever it was, like 30 grand at Summit for winning that event. All that range in between, all the work that was given, it was kind of like the fact that I can make any sort of living, whether modest or a nice one, from competing. In that sense, you are a professional because you're paying your bills with video games. And it's a kind of a crazy concept to imagine. But in 2008, when I went to my first Genesis tournament, which was like one of the very first Super Nationals, which brought players from every corner of the globe to Antioch, California to see who was the best. I think I placed third place there, and I got like, you know, $700, something like that. But the fact that I was able to place in the top three, given that talent pool, you know, it wasn't about the money then. It's just sort of like, wow, I can actually keep up, and maybe one day I can actually beat all these people at this video game, even as young as I am. That's when I looked at myself and thought myself as maybe I am a pro Smash player. Yeah.
Now, speaking of that, after your Evo win in 2016, what was it like to, you know, tell your loved ones, your family and stuff that, and at that time, you were the best in the world, literally.
It was really an emotional moment for me because for so long, you know, I had been reaching for the spot. You know, even in 2016, I ended up not getting rank one. I got second behind Armada, but then for these past 2 years, I've been the number one ranked in the world. But Evo 2016 was definitely the mark, the first turning of that page. You know, for one day, like, not even esports, like, all of Twitter just had my name plastered all over it. It was a celebration of Smash, and to be the face for the game that I loved that day was, words couldn't really describe it. And it makes it all the more special now because Evo Melee is no longer at Evo. The fact that I was able to so narrowly just acquire that win, like, the odds of it happening in the way that happened still, like, always seem astronomically small to me. Just the moments, the clutch, like, had I done any of those inputs 1/60th of a second off, you know, I wouldn't be the champion. But for some reason, the stars were aligned that day. And it's just something that I really hope, whether it's Evo or not, I really hope any person who's trying to make it big in Smash and compete, I hope they can experience what it's like to finally put away their demons and accomplish the biggest goal of their entire life on a stage that big. Because I feel like if you can do that, you can do anything with your life.
2016 Evo Melee champion, winner of Genesis 6 Melee singles, and a member of Team Liquid. Hungrybox has been our guest here. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. That's at LiquidHbox, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/Hungrybox. Hungrybox, thank you so much for your time today, man.
No problem, guys. I'm playing Smash. I appreciate it.